call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:20. Date is Friday, January 21st, 2005. Members present at this time in the committee, Representative Lynn, Ledoux, and Guttenberg, and I think other members other than Representative Crawford, who's been excused, will be attending shortly. Actually, Representative Roepberg is also excused today. We have a fairly quick agenda. We have House Bill 64 to extend the Board of Accountancy, and that's Representative Hawker. And then we have House Bill 47, extend Board of Real Estate Appraisers, Representative Samuels. And finally, House Bill 81, contractor license enforcement, myself, Representative Anderson. I don't intend to move that bill because we might have more testimony and let the members mull over the substance of that over the weekend. Monday's schedule, House Bill 15, seasonal hunt and fish lodge liquor licenses. So with that being said, this will be our first bill hearing, so I hope to make them expeditious, try to get the folks that are online or in the committee room who are from out of town or representing a special interest first, and then get to governmental agency representatives secondly. And we'll, I don't know if we have any of those folks here today, but why don't we begin with House Bill 64, and good. Hawker's staff is here. You want to just introduce the bill for us?
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like to thank the committee for hearing this bill. My name is Julie Lucky, staffer Representative Mike Hawker, and he apologizes he can't be here today because he is in the House Finance Committee listening to some very interesting overviews. House Bill 64 extends the Board of Public Accountancy to June 30th, 2009, following the recommendation of the Legislative Audit, which should be in your packets. The Board of Public Accountancy protects the public interest by ensuring that only qualified persons are licensed as public accountants and that appropriate standards of competency and practice are established and enforced. The Board is solvent. Licensing fees do cover the regulatory costs. The Board is actively working on the number one recommendation in the legislative audit, which is getting additional testing sites for the uniform CPA examination, and will hopefully have a test available in Fairbanks in the fall of this year. In your packets, you should also have a letter of support from the Alaska Society of Certified Public Accountants. We do have Pat Davidson, the legislative auditor, and Don Ruline from the Society of Public Accountants is online to answer any questions. And with that, that concludes my very brief testimony.
Great, thank you. Julie, are there any questions for Representative Hawker's representative on this bill? If not, I don't see anyone wishing to testify other than here to answer questions, but we do have Pat Davidson. Pat, are you interested in making any comments?
She's here.
Oh, she's here. Oh, I didn't see you. Hi. You want to come up and maybe just give a brief so we have some committee record? We can't expedite this out too quick without a little.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Davidson with the Division of Legislative Audit. As Julie indicated, we did make a four-year extension recommendation for this board. We also made one recommendation to the board with regard to its CPA exam. It went from a manual model to a computerized model. It used to be offered twice a year in at least three locations in the state. It went to being offered up to four times a year. However, the locations dropped to only one. And to eliminate any financial barriers of it to entry into the profession, we're recommending that the board worked with the contractor and expand the number of test sites.
And Pat, have you amalgamated in the legislation that was passed by Representative Hawker, I think it was last year, was it, regarding the test? Didn't he have some legislation that he passed that changed that? Is that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's the test that we're talking about. It moved from a manual examination to a computerized model.
Okay, great. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in the relationship between the board and Prometric and how well they get along, or they're working together, or has the board moved in any way or something to take over this, or is it? Can they create a model that Prometric would design? I mean, I recognize they're under, they have a contract, and they're the administrators of the tests. But I'm just wondering how we can better fit the public's interest into what Prometric does.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. it's a nationalized test, mm-hmm. and so Prometric is actually a contractor yeah. with a national organization. The board in statutes is allowed to use that test mm-hmm. to test participants. It is a nationwide test. All the candidates for CPA become licensed through that test, and therefore at this point it's not a realistic option to move away from the national test. And so the board, the Alaska board, is working with the National Association of State Boards to work with the contractor. And so it's a little indirect right now,
yeah.
And I think that's why it's more difficult to get them to move. But the board has been proactive in trying to expand the number of sites.
Thanks. Any other questions, Representative Lynn?
I'm just wondering on this board and, for that matter, all other boards, how do you determine how long this should be extended to, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years? I see some that are different. Who determines how long it should be extended, and what's the benefit of a shorter time as compared to a longer time?
Through the chairman, Representative Lynn, in statute, the norm is set at 4 years. When we make recommendations, if we make recommendations for something further than that, further out, more time, we specifically state why. Either the board has been doing an exemplary job and it's not controversial, then we may recommend a further extension. If the board has had difficulties, there's problems, then we're going to make recommendation for a shorter one. As you see, there are, I believe, 10 boards and commission, occupational boards up for sunset this year, which is significantly more than the norm. We've made a conscious effort in our recommendations to try to smooth that out. So as you hear these bills, our recommendations are going to go from anywhere from 4 to 6 years.
Mm.
Beyond that, we also issued this year a report with regard to the sunset process in total. And in that report, we're recommending that the norm for the extension move from 4 years to 8 years. There certainly has been a maturing of the occupations for a variety of reasons, and so you may at some point in time see recommendations with related to that audit.
Thank you.
Good. Representative Ledoux.
Yes. How long has the Board of Accountancy been in existence, and how many times have we gone through this these sunset hearings?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, unfortunately, I can't answer that off the top of my head. I would expect, given the nature of the profession in the fact that it's been a long established, I would say that the board has been in existence for a very long time. On average, the sunset reviews are normal 4-year extensions. However, there could have been individual recommendations for longer or shorter periods.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I should note it is in your audit report. Both my staff, myself, and most of my staff are CPAs and therefore regulated by this board. Therefore, we are not independent in this audit, which is a requirement to doing audits in accordance with professional standards. Anytime we do not meet professional standards, we have to note that in the report, and it is so noted.
Thanks. I see that you might want to stay there. It looks like also on OffNet we have Representative Crawford. Hello, Harry. Are you online there?
Who?
Do we have an owl online? Okay, so Representative Crawford, do you have any questions on this one?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay. I know you may later, so I'll ask on each bill. And we have Don Rulin, CPA. Are you online, sir?
Yes, I am.
Do you have any comments, or are you just listening?
No, I wrote a letter requesting that you consider moving, continuing with the Alaska State Board of Accountancy. I'm past president of the Alaska State Alaska CPA Society, and currently chairman of the Legislative Committee, and we've worked with the State Board for many years, and we've got a very good relationship trying to continue keeping the CPA's name safe and in the best interest of the public. And we're currently working on other bills that will come before you in the future.
Great. So you endorse the bill?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Thank you, Don. Any other public testimony or division commentary? No, then we'll close the public hearing portion. If there are no other questions, if I could have a motion to move the bill out of committee.
Chair.
Representative Lynn?
So moved.
Okay. So is there any objection to moving House Bill 64 out of Labor and Commerce? Hearing none, the bill is so moved, and you will have a yellow form that you will sign. Representative Cott has also joined us and can sign the form. So next we go to House Bill 47. And House Bill 47 is extending the Board of Real Estate Appraisers, similar to this last bill. And I know Pat will remain for questions. Representative Samuels, representative, is here. State your name for the record, and then give us a quick synopsis of what this one does.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Lelania Snyder, staff to Representative Samuels, presenting on his behalf today as he is detained. This is a pretty quick explanation, too. House Bill 47 is a bill that is a result of a legislative audit that recommends the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers be extended. The Board's functions are to set standards for appraisers in the real estate industry, oversee the examinations by which appraisers are certified, and adopt regulations to make sure state and federal requirements are satisfied. This bill would extend the sunset date of the Board until June 30th, 2010, and I would appreciate your support in this passage. And Pat Davidson is here to answer any questions.
Hey, thanks. Pat, why don't you come up and... Sorry to put you on the stand again, but maybe you want to just give a, just so we have some ample record, maybe a minute or two of your thoughts on this one.
Thank you, Mr.
And you don't have Representative Roper here to drill you. So.
For the record, my name is Pat Davidson with the Division of Legislative Audit. We conducted an audit of the Board of Real Estate Appraisers and recommended an extension. The use of state-certified real estate appraisers will be a continuing requirement for Alaska's financial institutions to qualify for federal deposit insurance and to participate in selling mortgage loans to federal government sponsor entities such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. As a result, we believe that the board should be extended.
Okay. Are there any questions? Members know that this will continue on through the committee process. If you have questions post this committee hearing, is there anyone wishing to testify? Hearing none, I'll close public testimony. And what is the wish of the committee?
I'd like to call the Director of Occupational Licensing to the stand so we can grill him on this, but in light of the lateness of the hour and me coming in late, I would move that we move 47 out of this committee with individual recommendations and fiscal note.
And seeing and hearing no objection, that bill is so moved. Please sign the yellow report. And lastly, we will go to House Bill 41, and that is a bill sponsored by myself.
81.
I will go 81. Through some, what did I say?
41.
Oh, I'm thinking of another bill. I'm sorry. House Bill 81. And in a nutshell, the bill has been drafted and submitted because there is a view that, and I think the statistics show it, that there are individuals in the construction industry and trade who are holding themselves out as contractors, and whether they be or not, they are not fulfilling the licensure aspect of that. And the state of Alaska currently investigates and enforces violations of construction contractor laws, and both actually the departments that came before us to give their presentations last week, Labor and Commerce and then Economic Community Development, have the authority to pursue these violations and determine if the work performed was by an unregistered or registered construction contractor. For the most part, they rely on public complaints and follow up with investigations depending on availability of the resources, and we all know that can be tight considering our budget restraints. And under current laws, these agencies enforce violations by issuing a citation to the person who holds himself out as a contractor and does that when he or she is not licensed. After the citation is issued, the impetus falls to the Department of Law, Attorney General, as to whether or not to prosecute the matter in court. And with over 1,600 unregistered contractors operating under this exemption, numerous reports have been made about these unregistered businesses offering construction services in violation of the law. So essentially, we have statute that says you must be registered, and there are people that are operating as construction contractors and holding themselves out as that and are not registered. Enforcement efforts, though, have been difficult, hence the submission of this proposed legislation. And it's difficult to prove, and it's hard to basically corner the construction contractor when the consumers aren't aware of the licensure. So what we have drafted here is basically a bill that allows for the issuance of civil penalty violations for first and second time violators. And instead of going through the Department of Law, a violator would either pay a fine of $1,000 or $1,500 for a second violation, or appeal to an administrative hearing officer and go through that adjudicatory process. The system, I believe, would be much more effective toward penalizing first-time violators quickly and effectively. I believe the fiscal impact is marginal, minimal at best, and additional offenses would go through the current criminal violation process. So basically, if you are a repeat offender, you're really going to be scrutinized, and the penalties will go up relatively to that. So I urge your support of this legislation. You're welcome to ask me questions, but I would ask that maybe we defer till a few of the experts and the people that have asked me to facilitate the legislation, the advocates for this, come and speak. And we have a few of those here today, and I will look to one of the individuals. Do you want Jeff to go first, or is that a good? Okay, why don't we have Jeff come up first and introduce yourself for the record and state your thoughts on the bill. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff DeSmet, and I run a general contracting and home building business from Juneau, Alaska. I've been a contractor for about 28 years. I'm representing our local building industry association here in Juneau. I'm the president-elect and will be sworn into office next week. I have been a member of that association for probably 20 years, either as an executive officer or a board member. I'm also currently associated or affiliated with the Alaska State Home Building Industry, and I'm on the board of directors of that association. In speaking to this bill, I'd like to speak in favor of this House Bill number 81. This has been a problem, an ongoing problem for years, as you stated. It needs to come out of the criminal side and actually go to where citations can be written. I've worked, I think, ever since Gray Mitchell, the director of, from his side, of labor standards and safety for years, trying to level the playing field for this problem that we've had trying to get enforcement. I understand it's always a budgetary constraint to try to get people up to speed with the legal issues to be able to go out and enforce this problem. So from our industry, we're really happy to see this come before your committee and would endorse its passing into law.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Are there any questions for Jeff, industry related on the bill? Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you talk to us about the impact in the industry of unlicensed contractors and how it's affected you and what you've seen?
Well, what we've seen over the years, there's been blatant violations of people either not having any license whatsoever, employing people without workers' compensation, any liability insurance, and usually the victims to that are either the employees or the homeowners. But on the side, also to represent us as businessmen, we can't compete against those people. They're charging pretty much the same labor rates that we charge, but aren't offering any protection to the consumer or their employees. So from insurance exposure problems for finished product problems to the consumer, you know, we see it time and time again. Representing our local association, because I've pretty much been at the forefront both on the state level and local level working with Department of Labor with these issues. I'll often call in. We have a program with our local association where somebody wants to make an anonymous complaint. We have forms that we've worked with Gray Mitchell from Department of Labor that they can anonymously give all the information, and their names are never mentioned. And I don't mind mentioning my names. People in our town here know that there's a few of us in the organization, and we try to police our own industry. So it's been an ongoing problem, and it's difficult to compete against, especially in the crisis that we're in right now with the workers' compensation rates and general liability insurance problems in general.
Just to follow through.
Sure.
So basically, you've seen competition from people that don't have to pay insurance, and on the side of it from the homeowners, from the consumer aspect, is the work's inferior and they walk away without any guarantee?
Usually, Alan Wilson, who is our current president right now, or myself, have been involved as consultants with lawyers here in town to represent homeowners that have fallen victims to the construction scams with the people that don't have any license, whether it be a handyman license or whatever. They're operating outside the bounds of their handyman license, and they go, oh, we didn't know it was a requirement. And, you know, they've sustained thousands of dollars in damages. The homes are delayed, and sometimes the people just walk off the jobs. And we often come in and act as consultants to try to get them linked up with a qualified, bona fide builder that's licensed to come back in and finish up the project. So it wastes a lot of time, effort, and money, and creates a lot of hard feelings against people in our industry, and it makes us look unprofessional, and we are trying to elevate everybody to a common playing field.
So would you say that the three main things, just for the record, would be consumer protection, so people, their safety is monitored and through a licensure, and then secondly, even playing field with respect to working with other contractors so that no one gets an advantage, and then third, it sounds like it would be limiting the depreciation of a contracting license, because if folks are working without, then they're able to
absolutely
bypass all of that. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah.
I have a few. On record? Or on oh, I can't get my sentences straight. Is that Representative Crawford?
It is.
Okay, go ahead.
So what I'm concerned with, I believe that this is, you know, a bill whose time has come. It certainly should be done. But I just want to know who will actually be doing the enforcement and issuing the citations. Will we have to hire new people to do more enforcement, or these are existing people, and you know, just who are they?
I'm going to look for a nod. Can Gray answer that? Not now, but Representative Crawford, we'll ask Mr. Mitchell that question, so let's hold on for an answer, and I want to get through a few more of the industry comments, and then we'll get to the State Department representative.
That'll be fine.
Thanks. So seeing no other questions, thanks, Jeff. We're going to go next to, there's a few people that have signed up to listen only. It looks like Alan. We'll have you speak, and then just for the folks online up to bat next, we'll go to Fairbanks, Mike, and Interior Alaska Music, and Music and Alaska Building, Interior Alaska Building, and then Tom in Anchorage, Alcoa Plumbing and Heating, and then we'll get to Gray. Welcome.
Chairman, my name is Alan Wilson. I am here today representing the Alaska State Home Building Industry as their legislative co-chair. I've been before many of you in the past on different issues affecting our industry, and I've probably talked to the majority of you regarding enforcement. And what are we going to do about it? I mean, you've heard us mention probably for the last 6 or 7 years that I've been involved that enforcement has been an ongoing concern of ours. Especially when times are good in Alaska, and times aren't so good on lower 48, we get a lot of influx of individuals into the state that are here for the summer months, and then you know, they get projects up and half completed, and they leave, and then we're left to deal with those. We've looked at many different mechanisms to try to increase enforcement, from increasing bond limits to the extreme of just doing away with licensing altogether. If it's such a farce, why even go there? Certainly, our association believes in the licensing program, enforcement, and the whole bit, and that's why we're here today with this attempt to tighten things up. We have worked, as Mr. DeSmith said, with the department over the years, and I think this is a good fix and a good opportunity to take care of this problem with no expense to the department and certainly no expense to those of us that are already playing by the rules. excuse me. There's one aspect of this bill, however, that I think we've missed an opportunity to take care of the other half of the problem. The problem is really two components. It's people acting as contractors, putting their names on their trucks and business cards and the whole bit, and out there and bidding against me actively. The other component that we see a lot of is the owner-builder. These are owner-builders that are building homes one after the other. And under the current statutes, it's very vague, and it says they can build one single family, duplex, triplex, or fourplex per year. Is that a year from completion, a year from the day they put the shovel in the ground? Where is that year? And then we've seen, especially up in the Mat Valley area, we've seen families, each kid's building a house. You know, and sometimes these are 18-year-old kids that are building homes, you know, and that's really not the case. It's the dad, it's their company. They do it time in and time again. It's just a very difficult thing for the department to enforce these situations. You know, you go out on the job, owner builder, it's my house, I own the property, it's, you know, it's my kids, and it's just a bad situation. So what I would like to do is ask for the opportunity, whether it's today or in the near future, is to try to work that into this bill. Why this, we have a couple more committee stops, I see, so I think there's opportune time to address this issue. We can do that in a number of different ways. We could define when the start date is. We could perhaps limit. I think anyone that's in the market that's building triplexes or fourplexes, they're doing it to make money. Not only is there a competition issue involved, but more importantly, 9 times out of 10, I believe they're putting a product on the market that is not the same product, but they're getting the same dollars for that product. So the second owner ends up paying the ultimate price, so the consumer again gets the short end of the stick on this deal. Back to the enforcement again. As a whole, I think that just by passing this bill, making this law, we'll see a lot of individuals that, just because the enforcement's changed, it's maybe easier for the department to go out and cite people now. A lot of them will just start complying. I mean, it's so tough right now to get yourself in trouble that why do it? It's, you know, for $250, it's the cheapest way to go. You know, that's the current. And then, are they going to take you to court? Nah, which is never going to happen. $1,000, I'm certainly going to think about it, and I'm sure the people that aren't licensed will think about it as well. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your time today.
Thanks, any Alan, questions? And thanks for your hard work. Alan and Jeff and others were the impetus behind this, and we appreciate that. Just on behalf of consumers who we represent, are there any other questions for Alan? Representative?
Yes, I was just wondering, with respect to the owner builders, is there any requirement that a home not be sold for a certain amount of time after the completion of the home when it's an owner builder?
Representative, through the chair, that's part of the problem, is that under our statutes, it's not clear. If there's, I mean, I would answer no to that question, is a simple answer. I believe that's not. Of course, there's IRS issues to deal with for tax purposes, but typically that's, people can deal with that in, you know, any number of different ways.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Next we will go to, we have a few people. I don't see anyone from the industry interested beyond the two in testifying. It doesn't look like it's so online. We'll go to Fairbanks Anchorage, and it looks like Dave Owens and Matt Sue. So Mike, go ahead from Fairbanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Music. I'm current president of the Interior Alaska Building Association. We've got about 200 member companies here in Fairbanks. I'm also a member of the Alaska State Home Building Association that represents about 900 member companies. And at our most recent state home building meeting in early January, we talked about the handyman issue, and reached consensus that we should encourage legislation to put some teeth in enforcement of unlicensed contractors working as general contractors in violation of state law. Keep in mind that licensed general contractors building homes must have at least 16 hours of residential training in building science in order to get an endorsement. So-called contractors working out of their pickup trucks have no building science relative to building in Alaska. I think that, as Representative Crawford said, it's a bill whose time has come. I think if we can get this in effect before we start ramping up for the next pipeline, if those of you who remember what it was like in Fairbanks, last time Alaska Housing Finance Corporation got stuck with millions of dollars of inventory that wasn't even worth maintaining because of the poor quality. So I think that it's a consumer protection effort. I'd like to thank Representative Anderson for introducing this legislation and suggest that it be passed. That's all I have. I think Alan and Jeff said everything very well, and no point in repeating that.
Thanks, Mike. Any questions? Representative Guttenberg?
It's good to hear from you, Mike. This is David.
Hey, Dave.
Okay, seeing no questions, thank you, Mike. We'll next go to Tom in Anchorage.
My name's Tom Gervais. I'm the owner of Alcoda Plumbing and Heating Incorporated in Anchorage for 21 years. I've seen a great deal of abuse of the handyman's license in the plumbing and heating trades. I think this bill is a really good idea. One of the main issues that has come up in Alaska, particularly in Anchorage, is the number of carbon monoxide deaths that we're seeing. Not always attributed to poor installation, but poor installation is definitely a factor in a lot of problems inherent in homes. All of the manuals that are given with gas appliances have installation manuals that say that there's to be installed the local and city codes. The local code in Anchorage, you have to be a licensed plumber to put these in. Yet they are rampantly putting in water heaters in this town without any permits or inspections. Another problem with the handyman is it's hard to identify him, that everyone thinks that somebody with a wrench is a plumber. I think a couple of my ideas for identifying to the public these individuals is, one, we could require licenses on the side of all trucks that are in licensed trades. And I also think that we could use a purchase, wherever you purchase your gas appliance, the permit would be sold with that appliance at the point of sale. That way someone would be looking at that installation. But I really think we should go ahead with the passing of this bill, and I appreciate your attempts.
Thanks, Tom. Tom, you're on DeBar, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good. No, you're a constituent. That's good. Thanks for calling in. Any questions at this time?
Sure.
Yeah, Representative Lynn.
I don't know if you're the one to ask or not, but as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, the line between a handyman and a contractor is what? Is it $5,000? If the job is estimated to cost more than $5,000, you must have a licensed contractor. If it's less than $5,000, you need only be a quote handyman. Is that correct?
In the plumbing and heating part of the industry, you have to be a certified plumber to perform any certain tasks on plumbing systems, waste systems, natural gas systems. The price, I think, it is $5,000. It's still a $5,000, yeah. But there are are skilled parts of the trade that are affected that are less than $200-$300.
If I may.
Sure.
I guess where I'm going to this, you may not be the one to answer, but somebody here can. Let's say I have a job that needs to be done in my home, and somebody comes out and gives me an estimate of $4,500. They start in, so I can use a handyman, correct? So then we get into the job, we find out we have complications, all of a sudden it's going to cost $5,500. What happens to the handyman? It's already $4,500, and it escalates to $5,500. How do we remedy that?
My opinion on it is, if it's a $4,500 job in the plumbing and heating industry, it's way beyond a handyman specialty.
Right, thank you. Maybe someone else can address that later on.
Sure.
I see some heads nodding in the audience.
One of you gentlemen want to come back up real quick?
Or Representative Cott?
Oh, handyman. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
handyman. Crank the James Taylor. I think that the legislation Representative Lynn is referring to is legislation that I sponsored, and that's where we change that so that folks, specialty license versus a handyman license, there were little tweaks.
that occurred last session. Do you, one of you gentlemen, have a bearing before we go on to Mr. Owens? Why don't we wrap this question up? Maybe you can address it, and then we'll... So your question, again, Representative Lynn, is you're just saying...
It starts out at one price, yeah. Then things happen, and legitimately happen, and it escalates to beyond that price.
Yeah, and my guess is you're going to say that's kind of an anomaly that hasn't happened yet.
No, I think it happens quite frequently in any job that you might go in and you open something up, and that's part of the problem. The sins of past tradespeople that haven't had the building science information and feedback, we've all made mistakes over the years, but one of the things with the current license procedures is that we've recognized our mistakes, and we've set into place education to deal with those particular problems. To specifically answer your question, it's a problem with the mechanical and the electrical, but I might add that by statute, those people that perform those functions are required to have, as the person that's online right now has testified, they have to have a fitness certificate of fitness to perform those mechanical trade details, in both in the plumbing and the electrical. Now, a carpenter doesn't have to have that fitness, but as a contractor, he's got the licensure to make sure that he's got the information to basically try to do the job as best he can, do it right the first time. I think we have to put a little onus onto the consumer as well to be, you know, there's enough information out there to try to deal with licensed professionals and people that have kind of a track record of performing professional work for money, for hire. And I think if a homeowner, you know, if we can get the information out to the consumer that, you know, they need to restrict the handyman to maybe painting a bedroom or repairing, maybe Representative Cott wouldn't like this suggestion, maybe a carpet right. repair or, you know,
carpet's fine.
But a floor covering or maybe somebody has a nick in some hardwood flooring or repairing some deck boards or building a stairway off the back end of a deck or something. I think the consumer has to accept some responsibility. I think you've picked an anomaly situation there, and I would have to defer it back to the homeowner. They shouldn't be hiring anybody, as the previous the person that's testified online said, somebody that's doing $4,500 worth of work in electrical or plumbing. They need to seek out a professional, licensed, bona fide plumbing or mechanical contractor to perform that service. And we've been trying to work with the public to educate them to be better consumers about who to hire and who not to hire.
And Jeff, for clarification, my point was that had not happened yet. Of course, people go over the $5,000, but that someone hasn't complained and said, I'm going to contact the department and I'm going to alert them that you're over $5,000, you need to be certified. That probably hasn't happened yet, whether someone doesn't want to do that because the project went over or because they're not aware of it.
We've had bona fide handymen that have gotten into situations where it's beyond their capabilities, where either the homeowner or the handyman has said, you need to get a general contractor in here. This is out of my realm. I mean, we often get calls from other general contractors who say, we don't deal with rot. We don't deal with fire restoration. This is the guy you need to call and give two or three references for people that are bona fide people. And we get those kind of references from homeowners that say, we had a handyman in here. He opened up the wall and it was rot, and he basically ran out of here with smoke and tires. So... our job, we see locally as builders that have been in the business, both on the state level and as the local levels, to educate the consumer so they know what they're getting into.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yep.
All right, that's all.
Good. We'll go next to Matt Sue, the final person that I have on my record here for off-net, and that's Dave Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
We can.
My name is David R. Owens. I'm the owner of Owens Inspection Services, located in Palmer. I'm also the president of the Matsu Home Builders Association. I very much appreciate this legislation. The Matsu Home Builders does agree with this legislation. I agree with the comments of our counterparts in Fairbanks and Juneau. I won't repeat all of that because they pretty much already said it. Just a few comments with regards to the owner builders, if I might. It seems to be a major problem here in the Valley, in my opinion. What I'm seeing is an abuse of the intent of what the law is. The law was intended, the way I read it, for a guy to be able to build his own house or his own personal commercial building, but I don't think it was ever intended for a family to take on four or five houses and build them and sell them and never move into the properties. And that's what's going on, is an abuse of the law the way it's written in the books. And if there's a way to fine-tune that so it's a little bit more specific, I think we'll all be a lot better off for it, and the public will be protected for it, because a lot of times these owner builders are not very good craftsmen, and the even though maybe their product might meet a minimum standard and pass an inspection, it's not the top quality work like you should be seeing out of a licensed contractor. And anyway, that's all I have to say about that. I do have one other issue that I hate to see this become a home inspector piece of legislation, and we have just been through 5 years of home inspector legislation. We were finally placed as specialty contractors, and I'm asking that the home inspector term be taken out of this if possible, and replaced with the word specialty contractor. That would cover all specialty contractors and or anybody doing contracting type work.
Can you tell us the page and line on that, just so the members of the committee can visualize what you're proposing?
It's on page one. It's actually in the title, and I'm asking for something that's difficult.
Page
but
two, line four.
It'd be line three on my copy. It says people acting in the capacity of contractors or home inspectors. And home inspectors are specialty contractors, just like all the rest of the specialty contractors, according to the legislation. And I just hate the focus to be on home inspectors. It's all specialty contractors.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. I will relay that. Obviously, they're here and have heard that. The State Home Builders Association, who I've been working with in sponsoring the legislation. So because we're not going to move the bill today, we'll address what Alan brought up and some of the revisions that may need to be made, as well as this revision, and we can bring the bill back. But before, I'll keep public testimony open. Before we move on, let's hear. Rick, did you need to say anything at this stage, or just here for questions from occupational licensing? Okay. So Mr. Urien is in the audience, head of occupational licensing, Representative Crawford?
Yes, for Mr. Urien.
Okay. Why don't you come up then, and then we'll get last to Mr. Mitchell for any technical questions on the current procedure, and then we'll hold the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. The other day when I appeared before you, I said you'd be seeing less of me. I wasn't expecting a trifecta today. Well, I appreciate you didn't call me for the first two. The bill before you is a very good bill, and we wholeheartedly support it, and it's a good step. I can tell you we have some very dedicated public employees across the street who work the area of construction contractors. And they're really frustrated every day of the violations that are going out there, and there is no way we can do anything about it. And we work with the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor does an excellent job of on-field and inspections. And with the passage of this bill, we're going to work a lot more with them, and there's going to be some aggressive enforcement that has never been in the history of the state. There's never been enforcement in this industry, and it's time to do it.
Sounds like an inducement for you to co-sponsor the legislation. Representative Gunbrink.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question relates with, on page two, the department may not impose an administrative fine on a person who's acting as a contractor or home inspector in an area with a population of less than 1,000 or not connected by road or rail to Fairbanks and Anchorage. How does that relate to people, somebody living in Fairbanks or Anchorage or on the rail and going out to rural Alaska, some place where there is no requirement that they're licensed? Because I worked in this field, and a lot of times construction and contractors going out to rural Alaska, where places are exempt from this, really need a home inspector, really need somebody to oversee what a contractor is doing.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I did not write the language in the bill. I would have put that in there. I don't think there should be any exemptions. You're right. People in the bush deserve the same type of protections that people in other areas.
Okay. No other questions? Rick, thank you. We'll go last today to Mr. Mitchell.
Afternoon. I'm Gray Mitchell, Director of Labor Standards and Safety in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. We do the majority of the enforcement for contractor licensing, and currently we do that with a staff of electrical and plumbing inspectors and wage and hour investigators. This creates some difficulty because these investigators have other tasks, and so they do these duties as a side to their primary duties. And the reason why that becomes difficult when we start talking about criminal penalties is that there's a very high level of proof that's required to prove these violations. And so you have a plumbing inspector whose main duty is to go and check the plumbing, make sure it's to code. He finds someone who's operating without a license. Now he's got a whole new set of tasks which fall into more of the police line of duties than his primary set of duties, and it's difficult for these workers to make that transition. This proposal will create a very streamlined enforcement process where they'll basically be able to issue this administrative fine and walk away from it with their report of what they saw on the site. The alleged violator then will have an opportunity to request a hearing, and that'll basically be the end of it for these first and second time violations. It'll be a very quick process. Currently, if someone writes a citation, they have to develop the case, put together a formal packet, and present it to the district attorney's office, and then the district attorney decides whether or not they're going to pursue the case. Throughout the years, we've run into some problems in that area because there's this requirement when you're doing a criminal violation that you can prove that a person knew that they were supposed to be licensed. And so one of the things that we've developed to deal with that in coordination with the DA's office is a cease and desist order, where we'll go out and we'll issue this cease and desist order to someone who we believe is violating the law. And then most of the time they stop, and we don't have to go to this next step. But it's not a very effective way to enforce the requirements, because people know if they get caught, they're going to be issued the cease and desist, and then, they get another chance to kind of try and hide out. I mean, we're not hitting all of the jobs, and especially a lot of the smaller jobs aren't getting hit. So, they get another chance to kind of squeeze by with no enforcement for, a year or so, or however long it might take. So this bill basically will allow for our inspection staff to do a better job of enforcing the licensing rules and being more responsive to the industry when there's a complaint.
Now's the time for your technical questions for Mr. Mitchell. He just explained the procedural process. Are there any other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Guttenberg?
Sure. Kind of the same one as I asked before. What happens if a person is acting as a of course, none of this applies to good contractors, and we all know there's good contractors and bad contractors and home inspectors. What happens if a person is acting as a contractor here in Juneau and then goes out to Halibut Cove and has a contract and then tells the homeowner or the liability that he hasn't been acting under his contractor's license out there, and he's walking away from his liability where he's not required to?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, that scenario, as I understand it in the bill, again, I didn't craft the legislation, but after reviewing it, the way that I understand that exemption to work is it doesn't create an exemption from the licensing requirement. It creates an exemption from the administrative fine component. So these contractors that are licensed in Juneau or Fairbanks or wherever that go out to a small community, while they may not have to worry about being issued a civil fine for a violation, their licensing is still required. And, realistically, there's no reason why they would let that lapse. They're going to have to get their bond back in place after they let it lapse, get their insurance all back in place. And, these contractors aren't going to be interested in doing that kind of stop and go. It's not going to make sense for them to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any other questions for Mr. Mitchell?
I did have one other point. Representative Crawford asked a question about the need for increased personnel, and I think I partially addressed that with the the concept where we have these electrical inspectors and plumbing inspectors who really aren't trained in the criminal prosecution business per se. And so we believe that by having this be an administrative fine, the potential for extra work on the administrative hearing side is going to be made up for on the efficiency side with these inspectors not having to spend as much time on the, you know, the criminal workup of it and spin their wheels as much with cease and desist orders and things like that. So I wanted to address that question. And then I also had a proposed amendment for consideration, and I think that all of the members of the committee have it.
We do.
Essentially, the bill in Section 2, which is on page 2, starting at line 17, which is paragraph C, currently allows for someone who's issued one of these fines to request a hearing over the telephone, and then there's no real specific time period, you know, that they have to request a hearing within. So it just says they have to do it timely. So there's a couple of holes there that, from an enforcement perspective, and from, you know, the amount of time that you're going to need to address these kinds of hearing issues, that we'd kind of like to close at the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And so our proposal basically, as you can see in the sheet that I handed out, allows for 30 days for a person who's issued one of these fines to request a hearing. And if they don't, then it's over. There's no second chance to ask for, you know, another hearing or to appeal it to court or something like that. You know, it's a very efficient way to make sure that, you know, we don't waste time dealing with additional legal issues once this initial 30-day period has elapsed, and it sets the stage for us to handle these kinds of fines in the most efficient way possible. The second part of it there is that, you know, if someone just calls up on the phone and asks for a hearing, or if they have that option, you're going to get a lot more hearing requests than if you raise the level that's required to have a hearing, which is going to take a lot of administrative time, to at least provide the reasons. Why do you think that you shouldn't be fined? And provide that in writing. So that's another part of our proposal. And then the last part is unchanged. So,
okay, Representative Guttenberg.
Oh well, we don't have the amendment before us, so
we can actually use this, and I'm not going to close the public hearing today, but we still have the ability to adopt this amendment. If I was just whispering to Representative Ledoux to move it, but if you want to move it, we can at least adopt it for a beginning change.
Sure, I'll move the amendment.
Okay, so we'll label this amendment number one as recommended by the Department of Labor. Representative Lynn. You object?
Instead of amendment.
Well, we have to object because
it's a motion. Object. Okay. I'm sorry.
Or how about he withdraws his motion? Go ahead.
I just we have a. I hate to say it, there's a huge dangling preposition here, and a new member of the Education Committee and a retired school teacher. We got on line 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. We have must set out the reason the fine is objected to. Could we maybe change it? Reason for the objection to the fine.
Okay, so you're referring to the second paragraph of this proposed amendment, and the second paragraph line.
The hearing that must be in writing and must set out the reason this fine is objected to, and that's like nailed on a blackboard to me. Could we change it? It must be set out the reason for the objections to the fine. And undangles the preposition.
In writing, it must be set out.
Is that a good proposition?
The reasons for the objections to the fine?
Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. For the objections.
I promise not to do this too often.
To the fine. Okay. We can make this a conceptual.
Yeah.
Let's make this a conceptual amendment, Mr. Chairman. Let the legal folks do the legal drafting and incorporate, because I think there may be some other
grammatical. So why don't we? So Representative Guttenberg, if you move a conceptual amendment number one, that would be.
Thank you.
Yeah, I move the amendment.
Great, and we'll have legal services.
I have another question.
This?
A question on the amendment.
Okay.
Considering that we're giving them 30 days, only 30 days, and then if they don't request a hearing in that time, we're taking away their ability to due process and review by court. Is 30 days an appropriate length of time? I mean, if you go from one job to the next, or you're out of town and your mail gets delivered here, and you live someplace else, your mail might not catch up with you. If you're a small contractor or we're just working through the summer, 30 days seems like, especially in the summer, can be go by pretty fast without catching up, and then we're saying it's over. That's it.
Mr. Mitchell?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, that number was basically arrived at through, you know, the standard civil rules for responses to, you know, court filings. If the committee felt that it should be longer, I don't see any major problem with that. We wanted to have the door closed within a reasonable time period. The occupational safety and health citations that we issue in the Labor Standards and Safety Division only allow for a 15-day period to contest a citation. So what level of time should be allowed really is probably up to the committee. Okay.
Representative Ledoux?
Are these citations usually sent out by certified mail?
Through the chair, we would ensure that the citations were delivered to the violator, and that would really only be allowed through restricted delivery, certified mail, or by, you know, personal service.
So they would know, even if they were out of town, someone will sign, and they would presumably be alerted that they received a restricted mail envelope.
Right.
As soon as it has a judiciary referral, they will massage it over there.
That is correct. So it sounds like you will not amend your conceptual amendment. We'll keep the conceptual amendment number one as written. Legal services will go over it. Is there any objection or discussion? Hearing none, conceptual amendment number one, as recommended by the department, is adopted. At this stage, we will keep public testimony open. Limited, though, and we will have the Home Builders Association come back with any. I would request that you talk with Mr. Owens from the home inspector angle of that issue, and then we will also look at the other potential revisions and maybe bring them back. How about the bill back Wednesday? So in 1 week. So we look forward to seeing you there and hopefully passing it out. Otherwise, that is it on our agenda, so we will see everyone next Monday. House Bill 15 will be heard, 3:15, and House Labor and Commerce Committee then is adjourned at 4:17. Thank you.